Howdy. Colossians 1, verses 13 and 14. God has delivered us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. Colossians 1, 13 and 14. I love a good story. Marvel movies are totally my game. All right, that is my bag. I don't know if we're allowed to say that anymore. Is that still popular? Right? Okay, yeah, thank you. But yeah, from Iron Man and Captain America and all of the Hulks at the very, very beginning, I was already hooked. It was amazing. All the Avengers movies, well, let's not acknowledge the second one. But all the other ones, amazing. And I love that for years I have had a continuing storyline built on itself. Any wonder that I like Doctor Who? But also trilogies. Oh my goodness. Like how many years that I had to wait, but Back to the Future finally got its second and third movies. That was my childhood right there. An extended series. 9 years later, and we finally get to the conclusion of Stranger Things. Oh my goodness. I am all over that for sure. The actors are weird, but I love the story. And, you know, with all of this is that it's really when you get to invest in it and see what happens. I still remember watching How I Met Your Mother for the first time and wondering, where has this been all my life? Why did I not see this before? Some of my very dumb mistakes. Because stories, they end up pulling you in because we see ourselves in them. We see who we are and we understand ourselves better. You know, I may be okay telling stories in a sermon because I've prepped for it, but I wish I were better at telling them off the cuff. You know, one of the things that I find fascinating about entering a story, though, I mean, when you really get into it, when you focus long enough on any one character, as long as you're looking at them long enough, something in you begins to root for them. Even the worst ones. Even the ones that you would never trust to water your plants. And that's saying something from the guy with the black thumb. You know, you spend enough time with any character, and your heart starts whispering, come on, maybe this is the moment that they can turn it around. No matter how flawed, how broken, how wildly unqualified that they are to be any sort of hero in the story, once you pay attention, you start wanting redemption for them. And that's how we see this man named Dismas. What a name, right? I think his parents didn't like him. It sounds either like a precious metal or someone who definitely owes you money. I mean, one or the other. And he's never going to pay you back. You know he's never going to pay you back. But he's not really a great character. He's just not. If you were choosing teams, you wouldn't pick him. You would hope you could just pretend you didn't even see him in the crowd. If you were casting a movie, he would probably be thug number three, the one who gets knocked out before the opening credits even finish rolling. Whatever shady things he's done in his life, they're not the sort of things you brag about at Thanksgiving dinner, and that's even with your Uncle Jim. And yet, the longer we start watching the thug, the criminal, paying attention to him, something in us can't help but hope for him to make something of himself. Even though his story is headed toward disaster, even though nothing good seems likely to come of him, even though he's corrupt, compromised, and honestly undeserving, something in us keeps whispering, yeah, but maybe there's still a chance. Maybe grace will find him. Because when you enter a story deeply enough, redemption stops being a plot twist and starts being a longing inside of the audience. The audience is hoping for the redemption story. And if we're honest, we want redemption, but not just for the criminal. We want it for ourselves as well. Because there's a little part of us that gets the criminal. It's not really about wanting to be in the kingdom of God. It's expecting forgiveness to be in our own dark world. We want it on our terms. We want it to redeem us without us needing to change anything. I'd love some redemption here. Just don't expect any change. Colossians 1, 15 through 16. Jesus is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created. All things were created through him and for him. And maybe that's the strange twist of all this. We don't ever actually want the perfect hero. Let's just be honest. We don't want the perfect one. We want the one who limps the way that we limp. The one who says the wrong words that we say. The one who panics at the wrong moments. The one who snaps at the wrong people. The one who breaks promises. The one who gets caught. Because deep down, we know that we would have gotten caught too. We understand them. We kind of feel bad for them. It's like when the flawless hero walks onto the screen and we think, well, must be exhausting being that perfect all the time. There's this one actor. It's like every time you see him in a movie, you know he's always going to lose the girl. He's too good. He's way too pretty. Yeah, the guy who plays Cyclops in the X-Men, oh my gosh, come on. He seems like a nice guy. But then, you know, we hate it. We don't want the girl to choose the good guy. We make up in our heads reasons why that good guy deserves to be ignored and rejected. But then the camera cuts to the side. The character who's sweating, confused, and frankly, morally reprehensible. Exactly. And suddenly we're like, there he is. That's my guy. The one who clearly has nothing redeeming about him. The one who actually makes everything worse and makes me feel better about myself. That's the guy for me, but hey, at least he's honest. Dismisses that guy. A man who is something of a mystery, except we know he deserves to be punished as a criminal because he is one. And Jesus, well, he's Jesus. Come on. Does anybody really want to root for the perfect person? Does anyone really want to pay attention to Jesus as a person? As someone to connect with? As a savior, yes, absolutely. But do you really want to connect with Jesus as a human being? Yes, he's human. But do you really want to think of him that way? Colossians keeps shouting at us, you don't understand. He's the image of the invisible God. He's the firstborn. That's the guy to be like. Follow him. Please. Let's be honest. When Paul says, in him all things hold together, blah, 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 blah. Most of us hear it like a refrigerator magnet or a stitched pillow at Hobby Lobby, the Jesus store. You know, frankly, you're like, oh, that's pretty. That's some good stitch work on there. It doesn't quite hit. Doesn't really connect. Doesn't mean anything. You're just kind of like, well, put it right behind, you know, my hip because, you know, my lumbar is sore. Because we're far more aware at a time when it says, in him all things hold together, frankly, we're just a little bit more aware of how things are coming apart for us. So we gravitate toward the character who's coming apart too. The more we watch Jesus, the more we admire him. But the more we watch dismiss, the more we understand him. And 9 times out of 10, the person you understand is the one you root for. He gives us a place to hide our hope. If that guy could be saved, then maybe someone like me could too. Colossians 1, 17 through 18. Jesus is before all things, and in him all things hold together, and he is the head of the body, the church. But you see, here's the tension. Colossians, it insists that Jesus is the one who holds reality itself together. You remember, like, the word is moving on the waters at creation and all, yet we keep trying to rewrite the story. We complain that the stories turn out exactly the way that they were designed. We say, well, I didn't want that to happen, as if the universe owed us a gentler episode. We watch the blonde dragon lady descending into darkness, and then we're angry when she suffers for it in the 8th season. We watch 9 seasons of a sitcom, watch 2 characters fall in love exactly as the writers set up in episode 1, and then we roll our eyes when they get together at the end and say, oh, that was terrible. We want our version that makes us feel better about ourselves and our expectations. We want our own story arc. We want our own ending. And when the ending is different, the anger wells up. And that's exactly what happens with the man we keep trailing through the shadows, Dismas. The one who did what we do. The one who ignored what God had designed people to do. He took the storyline that built on God's design and said, "No thanks, I'll improvise." The one who stole, maimed, killed. But even when we try to scribble all over the script and add all of our notes in red, thinking that we are the next Robert Downey Jr., we try to ruin the original story. The author doesn't abandon the story. The author doesn't abandon us. See, Dismas doesn't know it yet, but as much as he tried to escape a story that God would have originally wanted for him, God is about to sweep him up into a redemption that we never could have imagined. Colossians 1, 19 and 20. "For in Jesus all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, making peace by the blood of his cross." And this is where the whole thing cuts open. If God's story only worked when characters behaved properly and followed the right person, we wouldn't have a story. We wouldn't even have a pamphlet. We'd have a very, very short blurb. Because the fullness of God, it doesn't show up only in the scenes where everything is tidy and fits what it's supposed to do. It shows up right when the story derails, and derails spectacularly. Look at the cast around Jesus. Disciples who blurt out the wrong answer at the wrong time. Followers who can't stay awake through a prayer meeting. A betrayer who thinks the perfect moment to hand Jesus over is the exact moment that Jesus has finally revealed who he really is. Thanks, Judas. If this were a movie, the same audience that was so excited to see all of those characters mess up and ruin things would still be yelling, "What were you doing? He was getting to the good part." He was so close to making everything finally work. And then it gets worse. As Jesus is betrayed, as his story is ruined by the characters we were originally excited to see, the ones whose character flaws were just like ours, even while we didn't want to admit it, two thieves appear on the hill with Jesus, about to be executed for crimes they really did commit. And just to be clear, these are two criminals. We get those pictures of the three crosses, and you know, we see two people up there. These are not two cute commentators for the story of Jesus, okay? These are not Statler and Waldorf in The Muppets heckling Jesus from some pretend balcony. Okay? These are not charming old men making snarky commentary. These are hardened criminals, genuinely dangerous and genuinely guilty. And that's the point. These were not actors sitting around the casting table discussing who was going to play each part, making an amazing story that would win the Academy Award. These were people taking the beauty of God's world and destroying it, betraying it, ruining it. But the fullness of God means that while their sinful rebellion was never how it should have been, God would still step into the ruined story and find a way to redeem it. God says, "You broke the narrative. You mangled the plot. You took the only character that was good in this and threw him away for the others. But I'm still going to set it right." And how does he do it? By letting the only sinless character in the narrative carry the consequences of everyone else's improvisation, being blamed for what he didn't do while others lived according to a lie. Luke 23. Two others who were criminals were led away to be put to death with him. One of the criminals began to mock him, but the other rebuked him, saying, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And he said to him, "Today you will be with me in paradise." And that's what we find with the two thieves who were given names in early Christian tradition, Gestas and Dismas. Gestas mocks Jesus. Dismas turns to him. And everything in the story, all of Colossians' cosmic claims, that all the brokenness and improvisation and rebellion when we realize we completely ignored it, suddenly collapses into a single moment. The man whose resume is nothing but failure puts all his hope in the one whose resume is nothing but faithfulness. The one who deserves nothing asks for everything. Paradise. And Jesus gives it. See, that's the scandal of grace, the punchline, if you will. The upside-down kingdom Paul keeps shouting about in Colossians. The worst character gets the keys to the kingdom. This isn't something where we try to imagine that Dismas up there has gone through all of these things where now he's a good guy. He's desperate and he knows it. But he turned to the one who could finally give him everything. And he does. And it's a good thing he does. Because that's us. We do not deserve paradise. We did not choose the right path. We still don't. We did not cling to the right storyline. We threw away the only one who ever followed it perfectly. And yet God still hands us the kingdom. Holding the keys does not mean we earned them. But we still have them anyway. But here is my hope. This is my plea to all of you, if you will. Seeing that the keys are now in our hands, my hope is that we stop trying to rewrite the story to fit what we wanted it to be. My hope is that we stop insisting on the version that flatters us and ignores our biases. My hope is that we would stop returning to paths of corruption, self-protection, and self-creation. My hope is that we would now take the time that we have to say more than Dismas ever did, to say, Lord, change me. Help me understand why I chose what was wrong. Before I enter your kingdom that I will never deserve, let me follow you now. I hope so. Because maybe in that moment, maybe in that surrender, maybe at that cry in the ruins of all that we did, turning toward the true firstborn as he is on the cross for us, maybe that becomes the chapter, just like Dismas, that stands for all eternity. And maybe that becomes the chapter where the author himself rewrites our ending and the ending of all of those we reach forever. Thanks be to God.